kind of change. It's because I recorded different parts on different days. Anyways, just a quick recap of the findings of my study. I found that with my participants and my own experience, the decisions around injury management could be complicated by situational factors experienced prior and during injury, in addition to the physical aspects of the injury sustained by a performer. Now, to frame this discussion in these podcasts, I like to use a neat analogy of injuries being like traveling with baggage on a vacation. When we get injured, we tend to carry baggage that we packed prior. Pretend that you're going on a sunny vacation and you're trying to keep that baggage minimal. What's in that baggage we carry? We could carry our past experiences, beliefs, attitudes, and it can impact our perceptions. Our bodies also physically have to carry it. Also, I'd assume that you packed your bag yourself and you kept it in your possession while at the airport. What if others have access to that baggage and can tamper with the contents inside? So you prepare and anticipate, or you should, that there could be a chance that it could storm while on your trip. I like to think the same thing goes with injuries while performing. When it storms or you get hurt, are you prepared with the things you have in that baggage? Or is that baggage weighing you down and becoming a burden? On one hand, we don't have to prepare or don't want to prepare for absolutely everything that could happen while on vacation, but we do want to have just enough that keeps our baggage minimal and also prepared for events that could happen by chance, just kind of like that of injuries. So we left off discussing intersectionality of cultural pressure, stoicism, and brainstorming ways that we could create a more sustainable career for circus performers. And that got me thinking about our pathways and experiences we're bringing prior to the current situations and spaces that we're in, and how there's such a diversity in our paths of becoming performers. One of those pathways is by route of formal education in circus. Today, I've had the privilege of speaking with Sarah Poole, who's a leader in circus education and development. She has one of the most incredible laughs on the planet, and she produces some phenomenal aerial performers. She's currently the director of higher education at L'École de Cirque du Québec and a plethora of insight for not only aerial disciplines, but also has had a pivotal influence in my own philosophies when we coach together. Now, just to start off, tell me a little bit about where you're from and what you're doing right now.
I was born. No. I am originally from the United States. I actually grew up doing dance as my passion and performed as a dancer in New York before life brought me to Montreal in 2003. And actually, a knee injury helped me to discover and get more involved in circus and circus performing as an aerialist at that point. And I was kind of an old dog or an older dog learning new tricks with that. I was already 30 when I started discovering what aerial work was like. And I, through really good fortune, found my way actually into teaching and being really interested in that as well as performing for a while. And then I did that. I had the opportunity then to teach at ENC for about 14 years. While I was doing that, I also had opportunities to coach and choreograph at, companies like Cirque du Soleil and Cirque Heloïse, as well as work with really phenomenal artists who sometimes find their way to Montreal as sort of this mecca, I guess, or at least a hub of where there's a lot of expertise in coaching. And I think my dance background helped me be really interested in working with people on developing their creativity, their creative process as they're developing work, mostly with aerialists in my case, and how you construct the number that most people use. And I was also just really interested in how we learn and what we do when we teach, what we think that we're doing when we're teaching in higher education, because teaching for me is a practice. That opportunity came up to become the director of higher education at the École du Cirque du Québec. So now my job is to be responsible, along with many other people, but responsible for an educational environment instead of having just the responsibility of working with one student at a time as they go through an educational environment.
So from an educational direction standpoint, you know the premise of what I'm trying to do.
Yeah.
I realize that there needs to be more of a normalization of a discussion, especially around the taboo of injuries.
Right.
And I think one of the really pivotal places that we need to look is how the development of that performer and how we can mobilize that knowledge and the things that you try to bestow on them as a teacher or as a coach, how can they go into this professional environment fully knowing, it's kind of this informed consent bubble of knowing who you are, what your worth is, and also knowing the risks of what you're doing and how to navigate those responsibly. This previous guest that I had, Renee Mack, she said something very poignant that you know that you're in a space doing circus acrobatics that injuries could and will inevitably happen, but you will get better and you can build resilience off of that. It sounds a bit like a silver lining, but you can build so many things out of that. You can learn better your boundaries. My big thing that, I mean, I've talked about my own experience with injuries as an artist, kind of looking back on that in retrospect. From your perspective, let's talk about the suitcases and how do we teach people to pack their bags?
Yeah, we can look at things also on a systemic level of how are we setting up educational systems that can actually support student autonomy so that when they leave the relatively protected space, or what we'd like to be a protective space of an educational program, how do they know not only how to care for themselves, but also to have a voice? I don't have a magical organized answer, so I am going to wander as I respond to this.
I think we're wanderers in the circus community, exactly. So I think that'll land in good ears.
Well, and I think one of the things that I like about just having a conversation is just, I think ideas are interconnected like a web. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that I've seen, at least in terms of how educational systems for professionalization of circus artists support students who are dealing with injury, is that a lot of schools have resources there. They have incredibly knowledgeable people who are physios, who are able to be there in case of emergency, to treat, to deal with repetitive injury. And yet there's still this separation. You're healthy, you're in class, working towards your goals, you're injured, you're not in class, not working toward your goals. Come back when you're healthy and then we'll be able to work again. The reality is that it's quite messy and it's really hard because we're asking teachers as well to have a lot of information that maybe they don't actually have. I think injury also gives us the opportunity to be able to be like, okay, I have an injury that maybe stops me a little bit from being able to go where I want to go. How do I adapt my objectives and how do I adapt the way that I practice in order to be able to go towards those objectives? For me, that's actually engenders creativity. And that also demands adaptability and creativity on the part of the teacher who's there as well. Sometimes as teachers, or at least speaking from my own experience, and I have the job of accompanying them as they're trying to go towards their goals, they're not able to work in the way that I thought they were going to be able to work. Am I doing something that's injuring them more? And then how do I get the advice of people who actually know the body way better than I do to be able to give me advice on that? I think it requires a lot of conversation with the student in front of you, basically making them feel okay about setting limits and honoring their body. And at the same time, how do they know themselves in their own body with their own pain? Because sometimes somebody's injured and they've been told, don't do this, but they feel like they still can or that they still should.
Should.
Yes.
Sounds like a tyranny of the shoulds in a way. Well, I should be doing this.
And that's a real thing. Exactly. And so one of the freedoms that I think we have with circus and learning is that it's not like preparing somebody to do a international level competition where there are musts. You must be able to execute I'm not from sports, so flippy flippy shebang number 7. As in those contexts, a coach, your job is to be able to healthfully get that athlete to be able to perform the thing. Circus, in the way that we talk about it anyway, is that we're supposed to be able to adapt it to the individual, to what this particular body, what this particular person is interested in working in, things that they can do, and find a way so that they learn how not only to execute, but also to express. And when I think about that from my dance experience background, you have a framework, and often the framework is a limitation. A limitation can actually stimulate your way of being present in the moment and creative, because it's finding a solution to a problem. When you don't have the expectation of you must execute XYZ, which is a very concrete kind of thing, you can change what it is that you're going for. So to get back to what you were talking about with the suitcases, I think part of it is realizing that you don't have to go out into the world with a rote list of I'm able to execute this, 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 and this. That actually part of the journey and part of the process is being curious and dealing with and adapting to the limitations that your body or situations of space or other things present you with all the time, so that then when you go out into the world, you will have things that are uniquely yours. And then you go through different adaptive processes, of course, when you're performing in different contexts.
I think from a behavioral perspective, context is key. You mentioned that the framework in the perspective of improvisation, coming from a dance background, improvisation being kind of analogous to adaptability, and then conveying that or acting accordingly. And it's interesting that you bring up the framework, because don't at all want to put words in your mouth, but it sounds like folks' past experience is kind of like their framework of how they perceive things in the now. On one hand, I think you are in a position where people are arriving to you, and in X amount of time, how to navigate, maybe it's a new apparatus, maybe they have a bit of experience in the past, maybe they have a lot.
Yeah.
And they all have a different background, different cultures, different bodies, different personalities, different experiences. How do you meet that? And how do you give them the skills in that period of time, knowing that they're going to go out hopefully with that set of knowledge and become artists for a career?
Yeah, this is the thing that I think is, it's a beautiful mess.
It's a bit of chaos, yeah.
Yeah, but it's, and it's not a cookie cutter sort of formulaic way of doing things at all. And that's what an amazing opportunity as for teachers of circus, to be in such real contact with somebody's humanity. That for me is a gift. So how do you give them skills? I think the word skill sometimes is tricky, because people sometimes, when they talk about skills, often when I hear the word skills, I'm like, oh, that's the thing. That's the technical movement, and that is the competency that they have. And I think people often believe that when you're teaching, no matter what sort of like group or objective of teaching that you have, because when you're helping somebody achieve the technical competency is one part of what we do when we teach. But we forget about all these other aspects of learning. The whole part of education where somebody is figuring out how they fit in groups and how to communicate with other people and how to actually articulate what they want and what they need, and to have faith in their ideas and then express their ideas to others. That's also a huge part of an education. Then there's this other part of education, in particular an arts education in North America, where it is really about how do you know yourself? How do you develop an idea? What are the ideas that you decide that you keep and you're gonna run with? What are ways of approaching? How do you analyze? It's all about knowing yourself, knowing how to relate with others. And of course, then we add the layer of complexity of you also should be able to innovate and create and not just be replicating material, but can you be able to make up new things? Then go and decide how you want to make new things. And there's no educational program that's gonna prepare you for everything.
It's gonna satisfy some of the things, but not
some of the
everything.
Things. Exactly. So can you at least feel prepared enough so that you can envision a long career and being able to navigate all those unknowns?
The unknowns being?
Oh, your thing, injury, is an unknown. But I don't know, a pandemic.
Yeah.
Not having a market or a capacity to reach an audience anymore. So for me, when I'm thinking about aspects of how we can help people, students, in whatever context, think about what does it take to have sustainable careers, I think we're talking about creative adaptability. I think we're talking about being able to have autonomy. I think we're also getting into the ideas of self-determination and how am I able to motivate myself from my intrinsic values instead of having to look to the outside regularly for approval or fulfillment. So those things are also aspects of filling the suitcase. How you ask for help. Like for me, that's a part of autonomy. When you know that, okay, something's wrong and I don't know how to fix it in order to be able to work the way that I want to work or to create the way that I want to create. How do you go and ask for resources? Can you find those resources on your own? That's huge too.
And to facilitate that,
yeah.
Or to highlight the importance without being the helicopter. What are things that are reasonable that we can work through? Because there is an element of resiliency in that.
And giving people space to work through.
Of course.
Right? Yeah. Giving people space to work it through. I think as a teacher, if you don't know that somebody needs help with something, how are you supposed to help them? It's not telling somebody what to do. I think it's sometimes about helping them ask the right questions so they figure out what they need to do on their own. If they do have questions, you're responding from your perspective, but at the end of the day, the choices are theirs. You're trying to facilitate somebody's learning who is an adult. You're not trying to do it for them.
It sounds like assertive boundary making. In a way.
Yeah, because also, and this is a strange thing, like, I think it's a tricky place for teachers to have to navigate because you want the person that you're working with to be well, but it's not about your success or your value as a teacher being determined by their level of perceived success by other people.
I think that that's what I think creativity or vulnerability,
yeah.
The vulnerability of injuries.
Oh, yeah.
It's so existential,
yeah.
Especially for these folks who have quite literally the moment that they arrive at the National Circus School in Montreal or the Quebec Circus School, a lot of them have had years of exploring that space,
yeah.
Be it in sport or
yeah.
Dance or recreational circus. A lot of them have explored that in a certain lens. But what is that success for them? That's entirely personal. Is success doing the highest level acrobatics in a certain show? Is success evoking creatively? That can mean so many different things. So people are arriving to be educated by you.
Yep.
It sounds like what you're kind of centering around is they need agency in their process.
Yeah, personally, I don't think that there is one path that is more valuable. How do we support individuals figuring out what they think is going to be a meaningful path for them to pursue professionally after education, after. I think we need to look at it as it's not notoriety or money that is going to be the thing that everybody wants.
But that's the inevitable pressure that a lot of people are under.
But then we can also go, money for what? How much is enough?
And is putting yourself in more of a position of risk conducive to longevity, which can also yield the thing we're fearful of artists, is the longevity of our bodies. And
And if your body is an instrument, that means that you have to maintain it. And you also have to understand how it works, and you have to understand how it works in different conditions. Then you have to feel like you have the power to be able to say to somebody, I really need this in order for my body to be okay. And the circus is so varied. Somebody who is a contortionist who needs to spend their process of all of the things that they need to do in order to be able to be soft and malleable, yet strong at the same time and ready to go, and they have a very small window of readiness for that. Versus, you know, somebody who has a different discipline who might not need that. The way those shows are built, do they take all those differing needs into consideration in the way that they structure the show? Do you as an artist feel like you have enough agency to be able to say to somebody, yeah, is there any way that we can change this? Because I'm not going to be able to sustain doing this, you know, however many days a week if this isn't possible. And other situations where you're in a different kind of show and they're like, well, you can choose between either having heating in your dressing room or lights to be able to put on your makeup. You got to decide, like, how are you going to adapt to
that?
What are
your priorities?
Yeah. There's no way to have an answer to these things, but I think part of our job in education is to let people learn what it is that they need. Being able to listen, then also educating people so that when they're not going to be able to get exactly what they think that they need, how do they adapt?
Yeah.
Because it's a conversation, right? And those things are really hard.
Yeah.
It's really hard to have a conversation.
It sounds like you're talking the power dynamic between the director, coach, or teacher, and the student. And I think that that also does transfer over in a professional setting where there are other influences and expectations that are not just your own.
Yeah.
And I kind of think of, well, what are your expectations? And where do those hold merit?
Yeah.
Because you're going into a show setting and then all of a sudden there's a contractual output or there's an expectation that an audience has, a director has, a company has, that all of a sudden now you're the output, you're the product essentially as an artist.
So you've talked about the output. Circus has codes. For a long time, people have been talking about part of the expectation of circus is virtuosic performance.
Can you explain that?
Yeah. So when you go to see circus, people say sort of built into the DNA of what makes circus circus is that there's going to be this expectation that somebody is going to do some sort of movement or there's going to be some sort of thing that happens that makes you go, whoa. And the thing is, aerialists know that for some people, just to seeing somebody suspended in the air, hanging with both hands from the top of a piece of fabric, which is, you know, 40 feet high, is incredible. They think, my God, how did that person manage to climb that rope? And people who perform it go, this is my warm-up, you know?
Heights, I'm not afraid of them.
So you can create things that evoke that virtuosity that perhaps are not going to harm your body long term.
Or minimize the harm.
Or have choices for different contexts when you know that you're, you know, with a particular audience that knows or is aware of and appreciates level of perceived difficulty versus another audience that is really just there to feel something. How do you then have the ability to, as the person who's doing the thing, change what it is that you're offering? That also is, I think, a part of autonomy. And I think that's also a part of feeling like you have agency as the performer, as the one who is doing the thing.
It kind of sparks this idea of, and I can't name an answer to that. Once again, we all come from a different place. We have a different positionality in this community.
Yeah.
A big thing in behavioral research, especially in qualitative research, the positionality that you come in with as a researcher.
Yeah.
Because human behavior, human emotions, they're messy.
Oh, yeah.
They're messy. We have experience. We have trauma. Yeah. We come into a space as performers. We have a positionality.
Yeah.
And we have, like you said, that kind of framework that we're working with. And where I'm going with this is, it's almost as if all those things adding up, going back to the injury perspective, is the injury itself the thing that happens when you're feeling that pain? Or is it an amalgamation of all that past experience, be it emotional trauma? It's kind of like your body does, to a certain extent, have a memory. It's almost as if sometimes the injury itself, that's just a manifestation of potentially some of the situations or decisions or just plain bad luck. And then you add an interpersonal dynamic with another performer that you're relying on. Now both are responsible for one another and the other people that you're working with physically on stage or in a training or an education setting. So instill those values that they can trust themselves and they know how to establish boundaries when, hey, I'm in an environment and I need to speak up and say, I'm having a really rough day. I'm dealing with some personal things and I'm just not in the right headspace that I can go out and do this.
When we're talking about the resilience is, how do I work with myself to be able to get into a better headspace when I do have to? And will I feel okay? Am I doing that from me and not doing it because someone or something or an entity outside of me is telling me, I know that you're in physical pain, but we have to deliver this show?
Yeah.
And I don't have a clear answer on these things. I do know, though, that you have to try things out and you have to get them wrong. How do you learn if you don't make mistakes?
So that framework you said before, the framework is a limitation. The framework can also be a strength. It can be a lived experience, which is really the pro-con of folks that have experienced injuries, potentially know how to navigate it the next time, or they, by nature as a community, we learn from, it's very experiential.
And I like the fact that you use the word community, because one of the things that I find incredibly valuable is when people have the generosity, when they have been working in a milieu, a context, and they have somebody who comes in who is younger and who is less experienced, when they have the generosity to be able to help them navigate the new space and to share information. And it's phenomenal for me, coming from dance, to see people who are in their 40s who are phenomenally skilled, just in terms of purely physical skill, who are still able to perform phenomenally difficult skills, knowing that they've had this whole history of injury and different situations of working. And then when they can share that knowledge instead of, you're on your own, kid, figure it out. Yes. And I lived this. How you doing? I'll share a little bit of my story. Maybe it'll be useful for you. Or here's a resource that I found that was really useful for me in my thing. When we work together, we're stronger and we lift people up and we bring them along further on their path. And we don't, I think we choose not to live in a survivalist kind of mindset. I think generosity and sharing is a choice. I think when we get into a scarcity mindset, that for sure we don't have enough. But if we approach things from, here's what I know, knowledge is lived. My truth is not going to be the truth of somebody else, but if there is somebody that I can help, I will, then we all go further.
Yeah. And kind of sharing the narrative.
Yeah.
Like, your narrative is completely different than mine.
Completely.
Potentially. Well, potentially.
Well.
Totally.
Did you do ballet? Are you having a secret?
Hell to the no. Hell to the no. But I think it all holds value, because I think that one of the really big things, I see the mistakes that I made in not voicing a concern or standing up for myself and establishing respectful boundaries.
Yes.
Being a people pleaser in the setting where the consequence is not necessarily the director or the producer or coach or physiotherapist that I'm working with. The ultimate consequence, should something happen, is on my body.
Yep, and on your mind, because
and
it's
on
your body.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because those two are pretty mutual exclusive. They're so coupled.
Yeah.
And I think the moment we try to decouple them,
yeah.
I think we're missing the point.
Yeah.
Because I think about, I say this anecdotally, and I think a lot of injuries that are experienced, there are other things that are in play. There are, you could be experiencing grief, you could be under stress with something else, you could be experiencing financial difficulties, loss, you know, heartbreak, or just flat out tired.
Yeah.
So how do we convey that in a way of knowing the boundary in a certain context? It's okay to just sit down for a second and let tides calm. But I also say that from a position of having the accoutrements to do that.
Right.
And I know that's not the reality for other artists.
I hope that you enjoyed our conversation so far. As always, please reach out